This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Welcome to Inside Voices. I'm Kevin T. Porter. My guest today is John Gabris. Okay, little background. John Gabris is an actor, improviser, comedian. These are three descriptors for Gabris that have changed in size at different points at different parts of his career. But Gabris came up through the UCB Theater. And you can see him on TV shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine or Younger. He was on Younger. Did you know that? But per usual, you probably heard him as a recurring guest on Comedy Bang Bang or his own shows like High and Mighty, Action Boys, or Raised by TV with Lauren Lapkus. Gabris is a stalwart big brother in comedy podcasting. He's a little wild around the edges, but with a kind, squishy, sweet center. And he's been doing this since 2015, which is long enough to know exactly how to describe his voice.
Educated dock worker.
An educated dock worker voice. Yeah, no, I see that. I hear that for sure.
If I had to come up with a phrase to describe my voice, it would be educated dock worker. Because I'm loud, I curse a lot, I have a New York accent, but I've read a lot of books and seen a lot of movies, which I deem to be education.
Well, usually, yeah, people go to a much more like negative space with it when I ask them. So it is nice to have like some sort of like affirmative, like positive direction with it. That's not like.
And thank you for thinking educated dock worker is
educated
positive.
Educated is positive. I think that's a plus for sure.
Fair enough.
Usually yeah. People say I have a shitty voice or I have a shrill voice or something like that. One I did write down in case you did go negative is I think John Gabris has a friendly voice. He also sounds like the wokest brother in the fraternity.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Jamie Lee the comedian, referred to me as a woke bro in that I care about how much you bench and what your pronouns are.
Where it's like something might slip out when you're playing with your guys over like Xbox, but you'll say later, hey, we shouldn't have said that. We should really take some time to reflect on that.
Hey, I'm pretty woke. I recognize when I said the N-word 12 times that I probably shouldn't have.
And there's something to that, right? There is a strange, like, you do exist in this strange sort of package in the sense of like how you present versus like the content of your character, right? Like, I'm sure it is shocking sometimes to a lot of people, and it's probably evolved over time and even in the last few years, like how you talk about certain things.
It's pretty weird because I don't fully understand. Like I feel like I'm always misrepresented and I don't even know what I mean by that necessarily. But I always feel like when I meet people, they always have like the wrong idea about me, not in a bad way, but they're always like, they've attached to like one small facet of my personality. And we're already on minute three of your podcast, getting into the parasocial relationship of podcasting. But it's like, people just look at like one small facet of my personality or something on a podcast. And then they just, if they lock into it, which I get, you know, if you hear someone voice something that you believe or you find to be interesting or funny or something like that, it attracts you in a certain way. But people get attached to like small parts of my podcast personality or sense of humor or whatever the word you're looking for. And they get attached to it. And I'm like, oh, this is not like an accurate representation of me. And here I am as a white cishet male sitting here like, hey, people have the wrong idea about me. Yes, there's like, I'm not suffering in a grander scheme from it, but every time I interact with a fan, it's always like or a listener, I shouldn't even call them fans, but a listener, they're always just slightly off in what they like about me or what they take from my show. You know what I mean? I'm always like, or it's more about I'm less self-aware than I really am. And like people are doing a better job of recognizing my personality than even I am. But a lot of times people come up to me and be like, oh, and I'm like, really? I don't know. I love smoking weed, but I it's not part of my personality. I don't talk about it a bunch unless people ask me about it. But now more and more people ask me about it because it's like part of my quote unquote personality. I drank beer too, but I didn't turn into Spuds McKenzie.
Well, yeah. And that phenomenon is so funny too, because it does feel like making friends with someone at a party or at your job, and then whatever it is you talked about the first day is the only thing you can ever talk about again. Like, or you ask them to retell the same story over and over again, which is funny too, because there's so much counter narrative to that in terms of just the sheer volume of stuff you've put out too.
Right. Well, that is the thing. Like the first time I meet you, you're eating like a bean burrito and you're a friend of a friend. And then for like the rest of our lives, I'm like, bean burrito, what's up? And you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm a fucking pediatric neurosurgeon. Will you please stop calling me Bean Burrito?
Do you feel like it's always kind of been that way, or has that been more of a recent thing for you?
Yeah, I think it's always been that kind of way. I guess I can kind of exist in a lot of subcultures, like from being a little kid, like always have like had like different groups of friends. I wouldn't say I was like a kid who like code switched or anything like that, but I knew how to make the kids on my football team laugh was different than how to make my friends that I played D&D with laugh, which was different than to make the hot girls in my classes laugh, which was different than to make the theater kids laugh. If I was around adults, I did the things I knew that they would find funny and made the references and jokes that they would pay attention to. So I guess that is one facet of my personality. So and podcasting, I'm not talking to anyone specifically, like, you know, the audience is the listeners, but the person I'm talking to is who I'm trying to make laugh, or myself, you know what I mean? I'm not thinking about the listeners as much. So I guess maybe I can come across with like different facets of my personality in different episodes. Yeah.
Right. And that's funny to hear too, because, and maybe this is a misinterpretation on my part as well, but there does seem to be like a sort of strain of like unapologeticness in the stuff that you do and talk about. And so to hear like that you were literally catering to each specific demo and audience when you were a kid, I'm like, okay, rather than like, hey, what you see is what you get here, but more like, okay, right. What are you about? Okay, yeah. How can I present?
And I think you might be right a little bit there, because there is an element to like, no matter whatever I was telling my dad's like blue collar electrician friends versus like my bio teacher, I was trying to get them both to laugh, but with stuff that I thought was funny, but I thought would be more for them. Like I've learned that my ideal comedy audience is like 50-year-old blue collar movie buffs, which is frequently like grips, sound guys, DPs, cameramen. Those are the people that always find me the funniest, because they're just like older, like kind of bros, but they get like the movie and TV references that I'm making, you know what I mean? And I kind of have like the old dude attitude about young people and shit too, so they kind of flock to me. So every job I've ever had where I've been like a writer or talent, the people who always like, oh dude, that was great, is always like,
it's like old union guys.
Old union guys, because those were my dad's friends. My dad was like a set electric guy in New York. So they were all like, those are the guys that always find me the funniest, I feel like. And I think that is sort of my attitude, is just kind of like, in bro has such a derogatory term to it, but I'm for sure bro-y. I'm only bro-y in the podcast and UCB and comedy world. Any bro considers me, I don't even know what the antithesis of bro-y is. It's sissy because of the terminology, but we don't say that anymore. Any bro would be like, you're not a bro. And anyone who's not, that's been the dichotomy, that like the perfect example of it was, I was the funniest guy on my rugby team and the toughest guy on my improv team. And I wasn't considered tough by anyone or funny by that many people. But because I can live in both worlds, when I was being as funny as I was at UCB on rugby, people were like, this dude's a fucking genius. And then when I was doing like push-ups and or violent things at UCB, people were like, this dude's a fucking beast. And it's like, I was not actually either.
So, but you could trial that line of like extremity in both cases. That was probably kind of rewarding.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I'm pretty much like, if I had like a video game stat card or something like that, I like, if all your skills are 1 to 10, I have like a 5.5 in all of them.
Yeah.
So like I'm confident that I could do a little bit of everything, but truly not excel in anything.
Survive, but maybe not excel.
Exactly. And then that's pretty much to dovetail that into, that's pretty much how the idea of High and Mighty came about. What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy. The number one fuckboy. Standing 6'1", 307 pounds. Out of Long Island, New York, it's the number one fuckboy. Oh, Johnny G.
I wanted to talk about all my different interests. I talked to people that I thought was interesting, put attention to, and brought to the attention of the listeners different points of view and different types of people. Granted, all comedians, but you know what I mean.
There was another great show called Don't Get Me Started with Anthony King and Will Hines that feels like kind of similar in its conceit.
And also previously another HeadGum podcast that was sort of like this that I truly modeled myself after was the Jeff Rubin show.
He
pretty much, when Jake and Amir came to me and said, hey, we're starting a podcast company. We think you're very funny and you don't have a podcast. Would you want to do it for us? I'm like, here's what I want to do. I want to do like the least amount of work possible. Like, I just want to talk to people. I don't want to have a premise where I have to come up with like writing every week or questions or like book 3 different guests. I just want to make it as straightforward and I just want to talk to people. I want to learn and abuse people's desire to get their Instagram handle out there to talk unbroken for an hour to interesting people, right?
Yes.
That's pretty much what my podcast is. Like, hey, if you want, I'll tell people about your new book, but I want to talk, I want to choose a topic, make you come to my house and talk to me for an hour about it. And I kind of abuse that when I see someone like you, someone who I find interesting and funny already, constantly talking about something I want to talk about. And I'm like, Kevin, you've tweeted about Paddington 2 10 times. I'm dying to discuss this with you. Just like I would tap you on the shoulder at a party and be like, were you just shouting about Paddington 2? It is Hugh Grant's best role in a decade or whatever, you know? And then, so I want to just do the podcast version of that.
Well, so, you know, I'm, it's almost like comforting to hear someone that has that sort of like, not that you don't have like professional ambition, but just in the sense that like the base desire of it is sort of personal or social for you in a way. Do you feel like that's always kind of been a part of like professional life or performing for you, like even at UCB and doing stuff like that?
I mean, clearly I've been performing at UCB now for 17 years. Clearly I'm not striving for success or at least I am and no one else is picking up on it. But yeah, I think that's always been a part of it because I kind of like doing it and I don't hate the hustle. I like being rewarded in direct correlation for how much effort I put into things. Like that always feels good. You know what I mean? So I don't mind the hustle. The thing that podcasting gave me early on too that I didn't realize was something to think about besides my quote unquote straightforward comedy career of like acting, writing, and performing. It was just like something like, every week I did an episode of High and Mighty, and it's not like Jake and Amir go through it and go, hey, we love the shit with Kevin. But if you, instead of, can you go back in the second? Like, there's no redos. There's no edits. There's no take a second pass. There's no, like, are you sure you want to just have two guys from your rugby team on the podcast? It doesn't seem like they have a following, and that'll be your worst episode. And I'll be like, I don't care. I'm not trying to get fucking, I mean, I want more clicks, but if I had to go pursue more listens, that I wouldn't be having as much fun because it would be like, I hope this person with a huge following that I have no attachment to whatsoever can do my podcast.
Yeah, which feels like a special feature specific to like comedy roundtable shows, like if that's the genre you would associate with your show, in that it does feel like kind of an improv show that just happens to be recorded, where it's like, I mean, I guess there's a, well, I, even with an improv show, I guess a coach can give notes afterwards sometimes if that's
right,
in life.
Yeah. There is something about that where it's like, this is just my show. You know, listen, now there's just so much of it out there that it feels like it's diluted, even though there's no other creative voice in there. You know what I mean? Like, besides my different guest every week, it really is like just sort of, you can track my personality across like the last 5 years of like, oh, this is what Gabrus is into this month. It looks like for 3 months he had just learned the word preternatural. You know what I mean? Like, or he must have block recorded this because he's constantly talking about his sprained ankle in 5 episodes. You know? Like,
well, and I'm wondering too, yeah, especially with your show, how much of it actually functions as a sort of diary for you?
If I could have the ability to listen to my voice without getting absolutely like disgusted or stressed out, it would be really interesting to go back to some old episodes and listen to what I was thinking and what I was talking about at the time. But I have a hard time hearing myself or watching myself.
Wait, why is that?
I don't know. I think it's because I like becoming the center of attention. I have a hard time when I'm set up as the center of attention. Does that make sense?
Yeah. If everyone's like, then John's got something to say rather than like kind of
I'm like,
getting
shut
it organically.
The fuck up. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't know what that stems from and if that is even really why, but there's something about me. I'm clearly broken in my need for attention. Like, but I can't look at myself. I notice all the stuff that I hate, but I'm also in a good enough headspace that I go, not everyone's noticing how frequently I laugh at myself, or only maybe the editor or the segment producer or whoever's watching this one part is getting annoyed by my tics. But after 255 episodes, I'm sure people can respond, be like, here's something you always do, or here's something you always say, or anytime someone says this, this is the anecdote you bring. Because I also... my brain is mush from 250 episodes. I have no idea if I've said something previous. I've guested on so many podcasts. I have no idea. Every time I say something, I'm like, I could easily front porch it with, and I'm pretty sure I've said this before somewhere.
No. Yeah, you do realize after a couple years in this particular industry how many thoughts you have. And there is a limit and there is a ceiling to like how many original thoughts you could.
Well, it's like after you've been doing your podcast and guesting on a bunch of podcasts, you're like, I need to take like 3 months off from talking and just ingest information so I have new people. Like, I have to like see new movies and read new books and like watch new shows and listen to new things so that I have like a new foundation of information to fucking spew bullshit from. I always liked, and I think part of the reason High and Mighty, like it's in my bones, is because one of my favorite shows of all time when it came out was, I was going to say Party of Five, but that's not it, Dinner for Five. John Favreau's like chat show where he just went out to restaurants with interesting people and they all just talked and were themselves. And to me, even though in hindsight those were probably not even that good, that's what I... really a fucking, I was like, oh man, this is what I want in life. It's just like people being themselves. Like, the original pitch for High and Mighty was like, I want to talk to famous people about one topic, or comedy interesting people about one topic that has nothing to do with their career. Does Seth Rogen like the movie Predator? I want to talk to Seth Rogen about the movie Predator for 1 hour. So it was sort of like Jeff Rubin's show and also Don't Get Me Started at the same time. But it was finding more, like trying to find a common ground. I wanted to do like, did you hear on Gabrus's podcast, Gil Ozeri, the funniest dude ever, talks about Judaism for 1 hour with him? Like that's the kind of shit I wanted in my podcast. And I got to and I'm still doing it. You get a little lazy with booking, like being your own producer, I think, is where the job gets hard. I'm very good at talking to people. That has no bearings on how good I am at Dropbox, audio equipment, scheduling, emailing, editing, promotion, all the shit that's all stuff I hate. But I have learned via podcasting how to do it, which is like, in our business, unfortunately, a skill set, like the social media promotion shit. I had no idea about any of that. And I actually didn't even do it for High and Mighty for the longest time. It wasn't until I did Raised by TV, where I partnered with Lauren Lapkus, who is good at social media. Put it this way, this woman posts more than almost anyone I'm friends with that isn't a professional, and she's never annoyed me with it. I have friends that post way less than her, and I'm like, shut the fuck up about you. And I don't know what it is. It's like, it's not like I like her more than other people. I think she just does it better. She's got something figured out. And working with her, she's like, she taught me Instagram stories. She taught me swipe up. She taught me so much shit.
I'm imagining
Instagram.
A montage that's like, you know, Carl from Up and the little Boy Scout kid, like walking him through how to do Instagram stories right. and use technology.
That was what it was, truly what it was like. She downloaded Repost app onto my phone. And in the quarantine, all I have is my podcast. So I've been like practicing promoting them. Like, okay, let me do a tweet and an Instagram about the 420 episode. Let me do a swipe up. Let me tag some people. Let me do this. Let me respond, you know, like, let me respond to some listeners who have questions or follow ups or compliments and stuff. Just like random shit that I never did before that I'm starting to see some reward in. Well, before I moved to LA, the only podcast I knew about was This American Life. Then someone talks about Comedy Bang Bang a little bit. I have no idea what that means. But they're like, oh yeah, a lot of old UCB heads are on it. So I like download a few episodes. This is like right before I moved to LA too. And I'm like, oh, John Daly and Nick Kroll, love the, and all these people that I've always loved from being a UCB guy for, at that point, you know, 8 years or whatever. I was like, oh, Comedy Bang Bang. And I kind of listened to a few episodes and I'm like, this is kind of funny. This is crazy. This is just like an insane improv show where people chose their games before someone said, before the lights came up. And I was into that. But when I came to LA again, then nothing happened. Like, I don't know anything about podcasts. I'm just doing UCB shit. And then I do like one episode of Improv for Humans.
John Gabrus.
Yes.
What celebrity do you get mixed up with?
You mean like, do I fight with the most out at bars? No, I'm a...
That would be mix it up with.
Oh, sorry. We're going to really...
Mixed up
conversate
with.
Who yeah. do you conversate with?
I guess most people say I look like Jack Black.
And I was like, oh, that sounds so fun. I do it and it's me, him, Walsh, and Conroy. So this is probably the first podcast episode I've ever recorded in my life. And it's fun and it's really hard not to laugh because you don't have the audience to keep you sort of like in line, and you're just sitting across from Matt Walsh who's goofing off and you're like, this is so fucking funny, and you're trying, and I'm like, oh, this was such a fun thing. It felt like a studio jam session that we're then like, hey, let's put it out for people to see what they think, you know. It's like the lost tapes, and now thousands of episodes of, you know, all these shits, it doesn't feel the same way. At the time it felt like that and it was so cool. Then randomly I got an email from Scott Aukerman, was like, hey, Neil Campbell gave me your name. He says you're a funny improviser. Would you want to come on Comedy Bang Bang and do a character or whatever? And this was like probably in 2012 or 2013. This first episode was with Pete Holmes and Pam Murphy, I believe. I pitched this character. Yeah, I'll do this character who's really into like drive time radio, who like is a new, who thinks he's a New York shock jock or whatever. So 2013, I do Gino Lombardo. God, fuck, that was 7 years ago at this point. I've been doing the same character on the same podcast. So,
fans of the show who have been with us for more than 4 years at this point know that I have interns on the show every once in a while. One of the most famous, I think, was Marissa Wampler, who, to be honest, never did any of her intern duties. And I'm expecting more out of you, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm almost, you know, I'm in my third year at Nassau Community College, radio major. Mm-hmm. Coming out here for the semester, I'm so pumped to be doing stuff for you guys here. And I'm ready to go. Like, okay. You tell me what to do, I could do it.
Well, the first thing would be, you know, I mean, you're not supposed to necessarily talk this much on the mic. But okay. I did address you, so it's okay.
I apologize. I will keep it radio silence. See what I did there? I'm not going to say anything else for the rest of this hour.
Well, this is, I mean, it's not written.
And then having done Comedy Bang Bang, people start asking you to do podcasts. Then I start doing Comedy Bang Bang. I become, Scott likes me. I like fucking around with Scott. Gino works well with other characters because he has no real game. He's just me talking like louder, faster, and ruder. So it's a character that can kind of be slotted in anywhere. And so I got to do a lot of episodes. And after a while, people were like, tweeting at me and stuff, like, love having when Gabrus is on. I like signed up for Twitter because I was doing podcasting and shit. Like, and between that and Guy Code, people were like talking. Oh, you don't. So then when I start doing fucking Comedy Bang Bang and people are tweeting at me, people start tweeting, dude, if you had your own podcast, I would definitely listen. And I was like, oh, shit. So I pitch podcast Earwolf. None of them get picked up. Then when Jake and Amir come to me shortly after, I'm like, I actually have a few ideas, but I want to do the easiest idea possible because I just want to, and I wanted to be myself because I was having so much fun being a guest on podcasts where you kind of show up with no work. And I'm like, I don't want my guests to have work. I don't want to have work. I just want it to be a conversation. It all just dovetailed into, I was like, all right, fuck yeah. I bet you I've said dovetail like five times on this podcast and any podcast I've recorded this week.
Yeah, well, just, was that in one of the books that you read for the first time this week?
Yes. Yes, it could potentially be in How to Do Nothing, the one book I've read since quarantine has started.
I know we talked about it in terms of like social pretense and just like as an excuse to get to talk to people and hang out with them in person. Do you feel like that core thing in terms of what you wanted from the show with High and Mighty in particular has changed at all in the last 5 years?
I think maybe now, later on, there's a part of me that's using High and Mighty. Previously, it was like, hey, you should come on my podcast because I like you and you like me. It'd be fun to talk. There's an element of it now where I'm like, you're new or young or whatever the expression is, like greenish, and I think you're hysterical, and I have this, albeit, you know, medium-sized following on podcasts. Do you want to come on my podcast and talk about your new project? Because I'm a fan. Like, so I've been enjoying that aspect of it.
It's like platforming other people.
Platforming other people. And then also, like, because I'm constantly out there guesting on other people's podcasts, because I really do enjoy guesting on other people's podcasts. I feel like I've said this on a bunch of other pods, so I'll say it on this one that's about podcasts. I think there's a part of me, because of my background in improv, my confidence in my opinion, having a number of opinions, and my ability to be forthcoming and honest and unapologetic, makes me a solid podcast guest. I'll come on. I'll be at least entertaining. If not, I'll have strong. I get the premise of the podcast. Like if this is the premise, whether I won't go like, yeah, no, I don't actually care for. I don't have that strong of an opinion about that album. If we're supposed to sit there and have an opinion about an album, after I did improv, I was a talking head on Viacom TV shows. So I'm well versed in speaking in bits and getting concise ideas out there. So I'm a good guest for podcasts, and then that's been my bet to meet a lot of people. And then since I also am constantly trying to do more live comedy and shit, I'm always at some random show with a bunch of people who I've never met before, and I'm like, hey, you're really funny. Or if we follow each other on Twitter, and eventually I'm just like, hey, do you want to do my pod? You know what I mean? Like, it feels like a way to like go on adult dates, like adult platonic dates.
Yes. That's actually a good name for a show too, if you want to add yeah. that.
That is pretty much what High and Mighty is, because there's an element where it's just like, yes, I guess I could invite Kevin to, hey, Kev, let's go get cold brews and talk about Paddington 2. And then both of us may want to bail on that. But as someone who works, who has a podcast and a social media presence that they want to get out there, if I go, hey, do you want to drive to my house and talk to me about Paddington 2? There is a reason for you to do it as much as there is a reason for
yeah,
me to do it.
Yeah, I'm it gets excited. Incentive to both people, yeah.
Right. So for me, it's like a mutually beneficial thing. And so I enjoy that aspect of the podcast too, where I could be like, hey, it's if you look through, I have some random people that I've maybe haven't interacted with since they've been on my podcast, because I'm just like, well, let's see what they're all about. Let's have them on. Or they're starting a new podcast and it's on an interesting topic. Let's get them on High and Mighty.
And it's a first date that maybe didn't go the way you wanted it to.
Right. Yeah. Or at least it's a first date and you're like, hey, that was fun, but definitely how many second dates do you need to go on in podcasting?
Yeah. I feel you.
It's either we're fucking or we're leaving, baby.
But 5 years in, you do have to imagine that like repeating guests has to be part of the lifeblood of your show at this point, and like having people that you can just dependably rely on.
Yeah, for sure. I have a lot of like people that I have on repeatedly have now since like launched their own podcast or have spinoff. Episode 25 or episode 30 of the podcast, I start realizing like, oh, I want to have the Action Boys back on to talk about another action movie. Or I want to have Betsy and Mono on again to talk about Taco Bell. I start to feel bad. But then when the ultimate version of that is that Action Boys we just turned, I was like, damn, I really enjoy doing this one. I don't want to turn High and Mighty into just an action movie podcast with these guys, but I wonder if there's something we could do. So we discussed it, and now my Patreon with Action Boys is pretty much my job at this point in my life. And I mean, it's a not a great paying job, but it pays more than any other job I have.
Yeah, it's like a teacher salary, maybe.
Yeah, in a small town.
Yeah, in like Ohio. Well, maybe not.
Part-time teacher,
substitute teacher salary. Let's take a break from Gabrus's educated dock worker voice, and we'll be right back with more Inside Voices.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back to Inside Voices. And now, the rest of my conversation with Gabrus. I was actually on a group FaceTime last night with a group of friends. We were all playing Fortnite. And one of them made like a kind of snarky Patreon joke. Not about mine, but just like the concept. And then, like 5 minutes later, they're like, "Hey, Kevin, do you have a Patreon?" I was like, "Yes, I do."
Yes, I do. Asshole. Headshot.
But it seems to be one of those things where like there's still a contingency of snobbery in the way that like maybe just podcasts, period, were sort of a punchline for people on Twitter, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, they still are now to a large degree, but it feels like Patreon is kind of occupying that space and like direct support stuff, or maybe people hear Patreon and they think Amanda Palmer and like other sort of like frivolous like art installation sort of things, like
right
and with like the thing, and especially now in the economy, like how it is, like consistently podcast listenership across the board is down. Advertising from the next quarter is going to be down, but Patreon numbers for everybody and direct artist support is steady or up.
Yeah.
So it's one of these weird things where it's like, how do you reconcile, like, because obviously you didn't dream about having a Patreon when you moved out to LA in 2012 and to have direct right. support for you and Stanger and Rogers talking about, you know, Batman or whatever the case may be. Like, I guess what I'm asking is like, is that a tough thing to reconcile at all? Or does it feel like strange or bittersweet in any way?
It feels really weird. But it also feels like one of the first times that I've ever been ahead of the curve of an industry. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I got on Patreon with the Action Boys before at least the majority of my friends, my peers were on Patreon, who now I would say I went from being the one friend of mine with a Patreon to I'm one of like 50% of my peers have Patreons, which makes total sense. We were just ahead of the curve a little bit. I think it might be the future. Because it eliminates, again, just like with High and Mighty, the biggest appeal was Jake and Amir came to me and asked me to do a podcast after I had been like, you know, Comedy Central had passed on my third script. This, you know, all these fucking like, oh, I tested for a pilot but didn't get it. Like all these close calls. And it was all because of someone else's subjective decision that something didn't happen for me. You know what I mean? Comedy Central just doesn't think it's the right time for the script, or they liked Gemberling better or whatever. All completely reasonable, but it's very frustrating that my career was being just like lobbed into the hand and there was nothing I could do to be like, but with podcasting and then specifically Patreon, there's zero middle people. All the middlemen, all the middle persons have been removed. It's, and so you need less support. Like to make $400 a week on your ad supported podcast, you have to have like 40,000 listeners so that a fucking advertiser would pay that much. But to make $400 a week on, you need $2,000 a month in Patreon money. That's only 400 listeners. If they're paying five, which is a lot to get on Patreon, but not a lot in the grand scheme of things. So when you have 40,000 people listening to a podcast and you're making $0 on, and then 150 people listening to a podcast and your cut of that is $200, you're like, wait a minute. I don't care that my voice gets out to 40K, 50K people on High and Mighty. I make more money off Action Boys than I do off High and Mighty, and High and Mighty has 10 to 15 to 10 to 20 times the listenership of Action Boys. With podcasts, you split the ad sales with the people who are selling it, and that's if they can sell it, and that's, granted, there's no, I don't have to do any work, so there's that, but the Patreon just eliminates all of the gatekeepers and shit, and it's just you, and it's just like, here's my thing. Do you want to pay for it or not? And it's the simplest form of competition in the world, right? Granted, like some people are rolling into Patreon with 1 million followers on Twitter. And if you're like, if I get 1,000 people to sign up, it's worth it for me. Some people are just starting on Patreon with nothing and then building. Like I've been on Patreon for 2 or 3 years now. We just crossed 3,000 listeners. It's taken so long to build to that level, but that's a great number when they're paying customers.
Yeah. Have you heard of that essay, 1,000 True Fans?
Yes. Okay. I've heard, like, a guy I used to work with told me about it, where 1,000 fans who purchase or watch or listen to everything you do is worth more than 100,000 half-ass fans.
Yeah, and that kind of feels like the North Star of, like, Patreon economies in that sense of, like, right. Offering people something not necessarily broad, but deep in terms of like their engagement and their involvement in it.
And then that's why I think niche stuff does well on Patreon, because it's like, oh man, I've been dying for more Sailor Moon content or what. I mean, I'm saying that like that might not even be a niche, but like that might be, I'm sure maybe it's a niche for 38-year-old men, but 38-year-old American men. There's people who are seeking out the thing that they're fans of. If you happen to strike that, like, good Christian fun, it's like if you're into, like, the sort of attitude of your podcast, that's kind of niche. So if you're into it, you might pay $5 a month to get more of it.
Yeah.
But if it's just like, oh, it's our improv show where we all just get together and chat it up and be funny, it's like, I don't know, that's going to be harder to fly on Patreon. Patreon is the best version of the hustle. It all started, like, say, 2004, handing out flyers in Union Square to try to get people to go to see my sketch show. Like, dressing up in, like, in Times Square and trying to come see my sketch show at UCB. And any person that showed up, you were like, yes, we sold out a show. Did I see any financial or any other rewards from that? No. And I busted my ass to get more people there. Granted, it made for a better live show, which let us run longer, whatever. But, like, with Patreon, if you get one listener, it's possibly $5 a month for the rest of your life. If you gain one fan, if I promote the Patreon and two people join the Patreon, that's $10 a month, possibly forever. But it's also one of those things where it's like, you don't feel that if you tweet about, check out my new Funny or Die video. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, cool. It got 1,000 more views than it normally would. That doesn't affect, like, Funny or Die doesn't call you up and go, guess what? You're not in the crypt. Here's a check or whatever. Patreon is the one where you can feel the fruits of your labor, at least in this sort of, like, gig economy, creator-based world. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, and there's something to that, too, that is kind of emotional in a way. Because it is like putting a number to a value. And it's like you're setting that number yourself. Like you're the one in charge of like tiers and how much everyone can like pay for something. But there's
right.
There's something really satisfying And from the other end of the exchange too, because I subscribe to a number of patrons, but there's something really satisfying too about just like, here's what I think this is worth, and I'm not forcing you to also think it's worth this. But then when people say, yes, I think it's worth it. Yes, I think it's worth it. And then like show up to that. I feel like that's like, I wonder if that's like creatively satisfying for you and the guys with Action Boys.
It 100% is, because again, it's like voting with your dollars. I know that's not, this is not the expression. This is not the place to use that expression. But if 3,000 people are willing to spend $5 to $8 to listen to us, then we're doing something right for those people, for at least 22,000 of them. 60% of the people have to be actually really into it, and not, because like it's financially unviable for something to just like accidentally keep passively listening to or something like that. So there is that that feeling of just like, 3,000 loyal fans on Patreon is better off than like one casting director who likes, you know, like then, like it's like if we got that number to 6,000 people, I don't think I have to worry about anything else. You know what I mean? Like financially, I think I wouldn't be making like, you know, put my kids through college money, but I'll be making never stressed about like making bills money, which is crazy. I'm halfway to making like very good money doing one podcast a week, and it just feels good because every little victory is like a video game. Like you get the experience and you see your character get better, you get the money and it's in your inventory. It's not like, hey, they really love you at MTV. It's like, sick, what's that worth? It's like, well, hopefully next time you go in there something might happen for you. And it's like, whoa, what? And it's like, wow, they really love you on Patreon. What does that mean? It means 40 people signed up and now you have $200 a month in perpetuity coming your way.
Yeah, and I mean, no, that's actually a good analog to like, because there is such a like a game system with Patreon stuff where it's almost like every month, especially at the first of the month when people drop off and like, yeah, people like unsubscribe and yes, get charged, it's like you're kind of getting a report card in a way every week,
right?
In terms of like, this amount of people have continued to like this thing, this amount of people are not into it or not feeling it anymore or are like press for cash right now. Do you feel like that inspires you to like try to optimize stuff, or are you just kind of like, this is what it is and this is what it's going to be?
I will say the main difference is with High and Mighty, if I think an episode is a possibly a stinker, though I don't think many have been, I just know some are not as good as others, I'll still put it out. Action Boys, because people are paying per episode, like we do have a little bit higher of a bar for quality for ourselves, where it's like, we can't fuck around. We can't skip an episode. We can't re-air an old episode. It feels weird to give away episodes for free to promote our pod, because we just have this attitude that people are paying for it and they're enjoying it, and that's like who wins or whatever. You know, that's who we should be caring about.
Do you feel like if you weren't the one hosting your show, you would be in the audience for it?
Of Action Boys?
Or like any of the stuff you do. I'm always curious like what people's relationships are with their audience, and if it's something where it's like, you know, I feel like I'm good at this and maybe it's not the thing I'm most interested in if I was a consumer, but this is what
right.
You know, because sometimes that happens. And sometimes it's like people's philosophy is, I'm making the show that I would want to listen to if I wasn't making it, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing. High and Mighty, granted, is not like anything interesting. You know what I mean? It's not like, ideally, hopefully it's interesting, but it's not anything special.
Novel.
Like, yeah, it's not anything novel. Like, I would probably not listen to it because it's just it. But I did listen to, you know, hundreds of episodes of WTF and Don't Get Me Started and other people. So maybe I would foreseeably listen to something. Action Boys is, of course, something I would have listened to. I love at-length movie discussions. I already was listening to Blank Check and How Did This Get Made before we started our own. You know what I mean? Like, I think I would have a hard time hosting a podcast that I wouldn't want to listen to. I think people would be, or that like, I was just like, I think a lot of people would like a podcast about blank. Let me try to do a podcast about blank. I think I would have a hard time with that unless someone else was completely producing it and paying for it. And they're like, Spotify will give you, you know, $1,000 an episode to come in and talk about fucking cars or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be like, yeah.
Well, that doesn't sound like Spotify to me. Some of the numbers I've heard from them, unfortunately.
No. Yeah, I agree with you there.
Everyone has a different thing with this stuff because there's so few people I've talked to that are primarily consider themselves broadcasters and podcasters, and you still primarily consider yourself an actor and an improv comedian, but a comedian.
Yeah, well, I think that's the
problem with podcasts is a lot of people are in it as their side thing. I mean, according to my accountant, according to the government, according to, like, if you ask me what I'm up to at any given moment, I'm more of a podcaster than anything else. Like, I do more podcasting than anything else I do currently, and for the last couple of years. So me not calling myself a podcaster is pretty much just like a holdover from the, like you were saying, the mocking of podcasts, like in society as a whole. It's just a holdover from that, over my fear of just calling myself a podcaster. But podcasters are working currently. Comedians, improv comedians, and actors are not.
Like, yeah, I know.
So
I know,
maybe I am a podcaster. Like, I don't know. It is such a fucking bummer. And it's all just my own fucking ego. And I know there's probably people listening to this who are like, bro, I would kill to have your listenership, and I would definitely want to call myself a podcaster. But I guess there's just, along the way, you're always going to be like looking above and beyond where you are, you know?
Yeah, well, even for me, like even from the beginning, like it's always been hard not to play games of comparison, especially when I started my show, which is like not too much before you started yours, maybe it's like a year or two before. It felt like, okay, here's the path. It's like, this is going to be a bullet point on the thing, rather than like an entire universe unto itself. It's like, it's da-da-da, ba-da-da, ba-da-da, podcast, da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. And for it to not be a bullet point, but to be more of a consuming thing, I feel like it took a lot of work to kind of like reconcile and accept that, which sounds so privileged and kind of uppity for me to say, but it did take some work. Yeah,
it is. You're hosting a podcast, talking to podcasters about podcasts. So there is going to be a little layer of inside baseball, yes. A little bit of a layer of like, this sounds like such privilege, but you're 100% right. And that's like, I felt the same way. And then this is a terrible heteronormative analogy, but it's like, you're hooking up and having a great time with a woman who is perfect for you. She's nice. You're good to her. You guys connect. You're interested. But the whole time you're out going out on first dates with like absolute smoke shows that if you actually that you are undeserving of, or you don't even really want, but you think that's what you want career wise or relationship wise. But you keep leaving like high and mighty sitting at home going, where is he? And I'm out like I'm out at fucking Allison Jones tap dancing to try to get a fucking part in the new whatever. And she's like, what the fuck is this? And I come home and high and mighty's like, oh, you're back. Where were you? And I'm like, nowhere. I missed you. Let's do an episode. You know, like it feels a little bit like that. And only because of my attitude toward my internalized attitude towards podcast.
That's such a wild analogy that I've never heard before, but feels so insanely apt in terms of like, in terms of gratitude though. And in terms of relationship.
You don't realize how good you have it here. You're constantly like looking at the other guy's lawn going, well, his grass is greener. And it's like, hey, keep in mind your grass is maintaining itself, doing something that you started, you know, my analogy's off the rails here, but to back it up a little bit, there is something about like, it's only because when I was 21, podcasts didn't exist, when I solidified what I wanted to do when I grew up, you know what I mean? But like, in therapy, my therapist straight up said to me, he's like, why do you always, like, when you talk about podcasts, your podcasts, like, shrug it off or make it sound like it's, like, a weird hobby or something? He's like, do you make money doing it? I was like, yes. He's like, do you create a fandom? Do you have listeners that listen to your podcast that might go see something else you do or whatever? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, and are you doing comedy? Are you making people laugh on this? And I'm like, Yeah. And he's like, so what don't you like about it? And I was like, it's not the perfect job. And after talking to more and more people, that like, what is the perfect job in this fucking business? Would I be talking about this? Like, if I booked Brooklyn Nine-Nine pilot and I had done 100 episodes of the show, I'd probably be talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine this way. I'd be a millionaire, but I would be going like, well, who really cares about Brooklyn? Like, that's not. I want to be in fucking I want to be in a
Scorsese movie.
Safdie Brothers movie. Yeah. Exactly. That's what I was trying to think of, a good example like that. I want to be in a Scorsese movie, not this bullshit. It's like, is that going to be just me forever? And then you're in Scorsese movies and you're like, it's bullshit. I want to be in these. And I guess that's part of like a side effect of ambition is that sort of attitude of like, what's the next best thing? What's the next best thing? But I'm embarrassed that it took me several years to look back and be like, what I have, other people are currently trying to build. And I just see all these people starting podcasts and I'm like, oh, it makes my podcast less interesting. But in reality, what it does is just makes my podcast stand out more, as that it's something that's been around longer and possibly more success, or possibly more listeners. Not necessarily new podcasts get fucking hot fast too. But once I reevaluate my brain and get around to being like, well, yeah, I'm getting everything I want out of podcasts. I'm meeting new people. I'm making a little bit of money. I'm having fun. People laugh at it. I got to tour with it. What other priorities do I have in life besides like making money, making people laugh, meeting new people, and traveling? Those are like my four favorite things. So it's like I've come back around and in the last couple of years, like diversified my podcast. Like I have some Earwolf podcasts like Stitcher Premium with Lapkus or as Gino. I have High and Mighty, which is still free. I have Action Boys, which is paid. I do Smoke Me Up on Starburns with Besser and Horatio, which is mostly just to meet people in the cannabis world. If I didn't really want to do or like podcasts, I probably wouldn't be lining up my fifth recurring podcast or driving to Highland Park in traffic to guest on a podcast that I've never heard of because the host emailed me and said they were a fan. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I clearly like podcasts. I'm doing all this shit. Why can't I just cop to myself? Why can't I just admit to myself that I do? I don't know what it is.
And it's still a nice community. And maybe this will change in the next few years. I don't think it will, even with like the celebrity influx, but it still feels like the kind of community that you want to be a part of, in the sense of like the economy of favors and goodwill and like, yeah, doing the drive to Highland Park for the person you don't know or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, it reminds me of like early UCB stuff. And I'm sure UCB stuff, meaning I just early, young, creative life, is probably the parallels are everywhere. But it's like, you want to be in my video? Oh, cool. It's like, well, I did Kevin's video, so I could ask Kevin to be in my video. Or like, oh, I held a boom mic, like a film school. Like, I held a boom mic for my, like, oh, so-and-so did second unit on so-and-so's movie. Like, the podcast world is that too, which I always enjoyed. Like, the perfect example is me and Lauren were doing Raised by TV in Philadelphia, but she was also on a Comedy Bang Bang tour. So she asks PFT if he'll stay one more day on his tour to do the live show in Philly with us. And of course, PFT, because he rules. I mean, we paid for his hotel and helped him and paid for him to move his flight. But like, he moved his flight, got a hotel in Philly, and did our show because we asked him. And also, once Ackerman got wind of that, he goes, well, Comedy Bang Bang is going to be in New Haven the night before. Lapkus, why don't you ask Gabrus if he wants to come one day? And like, because I made a little bit of money on the Comedy Bang Bang tour and I got to do two shows, I made more money because I had to fly to East Coast anyway. So it was like, there's like these small things where it's like, oh, we back each other up. And that feels like early creative stuff of like, Kevin, I know you have this office space. Can we use it for an overnight shoot? Hey, Gabrus, I know you have this. Can we like that? Back in the day in my early 20s, so doing it again in my 30s with fucking podcasting feels cool. Of like, hey, you're this new podcast, I'll guest on yours, you come on mine, I need guests, you need guests, like, let's help each other out. I dig that it's almost kind of understood when it's like, hey, I did your podcast, here's mine, and you're like, there's no like, ugh, you're like, no, that's the rule, they did mine, I'll do theirs.
Yeah.
Which I kind of dig, yeah.
It feels like a nice social responsibility. It doesn't feel like an overstep. It just feels like, yeah. Especially when you produce your own show, you know how like it still feels like, you were talking about platonic dates, but it does feel like asking someone on a date to book them. Of like, hey, it'll be a good time.
Oh, it's so hard. And even when they're friends, and like even if you've done their podcast 10 times, it still feels insane to be like, hey, do you want to do mine? I know we kind of half talked about how much we dislike podcasts, but do you want to do mine next week? And you're like, yeah, I'll be there.
We were talking about, before we started the conversation on mic, just motivation issues now with COVID-19 and Corona times, and just yes, like working up the will to do anything at all. because podcasts are the only thing most of us can do right now, we're going to, even the motivation to do that, this thing that like can pretty much no one I know has been interrupted with this stuff. But like for you, which is like such a gift for you though, like when everything's just like, okay, do I run today? Do I work out? Do I read a book? Do I do this? How do you like work up motivation? And I'm actually asking this question so you can tell me with a lot of this stuff in terms of like, how do you still care and find meaning and value and purpose in it? Do you think about positive impact with the audience? Is that what does it for you? What is it?
You can tell by my style of comedy, and if you've ever seen or listened, I don't always think about the audience. Because Action Boys, we had a bunch of episodes in the can because Ben was going to start a new job. So we put a bunch of episodes in the can before COVID. So we had like 3 weeks where we didn't have to record, but also listeners kept tweeting at us like, holy shit, it's so great to listen to you guys. Because they were backlogged, there was no references of stay at shelter at home and stuff like that. So people are like, oh, this was so great. And it was so freeing to not hear about it. And we were like, oh, and didn't even think about like the emotional, like you're saying, like how good this will be for listeners to be doing it. So for me, what I try to do is one a day so that it's only, I only have to get myself up to do one thing. And I try to do it later in the day because I find I can build some momentum eventually. Like, we were supposed to record at 2. At, like, 12:30, I still hadn't gone for my run and, like, workout. And I was just like, oh, Kevin, can we do 3? And I hate doing the shit. But there is also an element of, like, I'm assuming you don't have something to fucking do right at 3:30. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So there's that. And it's hard to get motivated, but there's also the part of me that's like, this is what I want to do and I can do it. I got to be so thankful. For me, the person that keeps me the most in check is my brother, who is a nurse in a pulmonary ward on Long Island throughout all this. And he, one time we were just texting and he's like, it's just weird that I see people complaining about getting to stay home. And I never thought about the stay at home part as getting to stay at home. I always thought about it as being forced to stay home or having to stay home. And from that perspective of I get to stay home, then fuck, the fact that I can do my job from home means I should just fucking do it. And then the people who are listening, podcast listenership doesn't seem to be fucking plummeting. It seems to be like people are like, granted, no one has commutes right now, but I think people are still listening to shit that they were listening to before. And High and Mighty has always been sort of like, you know, poured directly from the tap that is my brain. So might as well keep going on and keep talking about COVID and all this shit and just dealing with it. Now, for me, on the other end, on the opposite side of that, Action Boys is for me the social release that I need. Because granted, it is over Zoom, which is a little more frustrating, but also the same reason why I was pumped to do your podcast. I'm like, oh, it'd be nice to talk to Kevin for an hour right now. So like with Action Boys, it's like those are my buds who I used to see every week for 3 hours. Now I don't. So it feels so good to get on with them and catch up. And doing the podcast is like at this point probably more for me than the listeners. You know, it just feels so good to see them and to talk to people that I just am exclusively talking to my wife right now. So having a podcast, like just talking to someone that isn't my wife is good for both me and my wife. So it's been that part of it. So I look forward to Action Boys and I look forward to High and Mighty. I look forward to guesting on people's podcasts.
Gabrus, you got a very friendly voice. You do sound like a doc worker with like an MFA at least, if not a PhD.
Thank you.
And I think a lot of people enjoy hearing it every week.
I appreciate that, Kevin. That's really nice to hear. And it's nice to hear from someone who's like I don't even want to say art. I'll say medium, who are in the same medium as you, who do it well to say that they like yours. Feels good. It feels very good, Kev.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Thank you. And thank you for talking to me today.
Thanks for talking to me. We all need this now. John Gabrus has an educated dock worker voice, and you can hear that voice on High and Mighty wherever you get your podcasts and on Action Boys on Patreon. Inside Voices is produced by me and Steve Allman. Our theme music is by Pam Autori, and I'm your host, Kevin T. Porter. Thanks for spending time with us today on Inside Voices.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.